I reckon Nathaniel would have agreed with that. And I can think of lots of other people here who would have agreed with that. Sometimes the Bible is tough to understand. There are bits of it that have you read bits of it and you've gone, you just want to either close your eyes, take a paracetamol for the headache and fast forward to something that makes more sense. Okay, there are bits of the Bible that are like that, that's fine, but not this morning. Not this morning. This morning, we have just got a really simple passage, a really lovely passage, a lovely narrative, story, events that took place in real people's lives, their earthly lives. And I thought I'd come up with an awesome title. I thought I'd come up with something that would just wow you. You know, like tabloid Daily Mail would be proud of this, you know. The wonderful way of the word in the world is witness. Nah, even that's too much alliteration for me. You know, I like a little bit, but that's too much. No. What we have in this story that Malcolm read, the last part of chapter one, this amazing first chapter of John's Gospel, what we have are how ordinary people become followers of Jesus Christ. That's essentially what it's about, which is not a snappy Daily Mail headline, but that is what it is. How ordinary people become followers of Jesus Christ. Which actually gets to the heart of one of the frustrations that sometimes some of us express. Why don't more people follow Jesus? Why don't more people come to faith? Why don't more people come to church? I'm wondering how many of you have asked that question yourself. Yeah? And it comes out of a bit of a frustration. Okay, let's see if we can maybe address that frustration as we look at this really simple passage. By the end of it, let's not fast forward and go home yet. By the end of it, Jesus has got five disciples around him. He starts off with none. Let's be clear, none to start, and ends up at the end of this incident with five. And we see a lovely chain reaction take place. The first thing that happens when Andrew and an unnamed disciple of John the Baptist leave John the Baptist and follow Jesus. And that's the discipleship word, follow, because being a follower of Jesus, being a disciple of Jesus, involves movement. It involves actually changing, being different, following the direction of Jesus. When they come up to Jesus, Jesus' first words, what are Jesus' first words in John's Gospel? Oh, amazing, these words. Truly amazing. Have I got it up on the screen? Are you following in your Bibles? When the two disciples heard him, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" Amazing, isn't it? Not like that? Not like that. You don't know how it was like. No, you're not like that, Mark. Ah, but you don't know. What was it like? Well, there's something to think about, isn't it? But that's what he says. Jesus says to those who first inquire, "What do you want?" I don't actually think it's the sort of response that you do occasionally get if you go into a shop and they're just about to close and the sales assistant's been working a 10-hour shift, you know, and they're just about to close the till and they want to settle up. And yeah, come on. You'd well imagine them saying to you, wouldn't you? "Well, what do you want?" I don't think it comes from a place of irritation. No, I don't think so. Jesus welcomes inquirers. But he often asks searching questions as well. "What do you want of me? What do you wish me to do for you?" So what Andrew and the unnamed person do in response is say, get ready for this, you've seen it up on the screen, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" Hang on, are they following the conversation here? Doesn't seem to quite make sense, does it? Where are you staying? Not the most profound words in the Bible, I don't think. It might just be social awkwardness. Have you ever been in that situation where you've said something in response to what somebody said and then you thought, why on earth did I say that? It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I just must look like a right... Maybe it was that, or it might be that they were indicating their willingness to go with Jesus and follow him. Or it might be that John, the gospel, was using one of his favourite words, staying. Or, if you change it a little bit, abiding. Similar sense, really. He uses it in the relationship between God the Father and God the Son. Staying together, abiding together. And actually, John uses it multiple times in his gospel for those who are seeking to be followers of Jesus, to stay with, to be with. Basically, to hang out with Jesus. That is what a disciple is. Somebody who hangs out with Jesus, wants to be with Jesus. I'm not sure which of those it is, to be honest, really. But there is this domino effect that we get. They go and stay with him. Then the very next day, Andrew goes out and invites his brother Simon to come and join Jesus. And Simon joins them. And then they find Philip, who goes out and finds Nathanael, who's a bit of a crusty old character, I think, maybe a skeptic. And Philip brings Nathanael to Jesus so that Jesus can actually now do the heavy lifting and persuade him as to who he is. And there's actually quite an enjoyable lot of stuff in here to mull over. But I've got just 2 points this morning, really. Christian witness is firstly invitational and communal. What do I mean by that? Well, let me talk to you about that for a little bit. Somehow, I think, I fear, I'm sad that we have made witnessing for Jesus as involving a technique, a process, something that you have to learn off pat. And most of us feel pretty guilty about that. And if you're already beginning to feel guilty about it, I've got some words for you. Stop it. It's not helpful. We've also made witness the field of experts. Oh, only certain people do it who've got certain skills and abilities, who've been trained to a certain standard. Well, that's not helpful either. Then there's Peckham High Street. No? Who knows Peckham High Street? Anybody ever been to Peckham? Oh, yeah, one or two people. Peckham High Street. Rob May, regional minister, Baptist minister, friend, is going to be coming to preach in a couple of weeks' time. He used to be in that area, knows that area a little bit. He'd tell you Peckham High Street is the most evangelised, witnessed street in London, which probably means it's the most evangelised and witnessed street in the UK. He knows that because, you know, he knows that every Saturday there are 4 or 5 groups of people shouting at everybody who passes them by. Every week. And if I was walking along Peckham High Street on Saturday morning, I'd be avoiding those people who are shouting at me. I do avoid people who shout at me, whatever they're shouting, even if it's supposed to be some sort of Christian witness. There are some forms of Christian witness that just don't seem to respect people. Witnessing is not about offloading a whole load of information, you know, getting somebody to download what you know into their brain. That's not Christian witness at all. Too much witness has the absence of love. And that's got to be the driver. We love God and we love each other. And when those two are working, we're able to, well, more helpfully witness. There was a very, very sad story, I thought. All right. Prejudiced it for you in the sense I've told you what I think about it. But there was an occasion a few years ago, not in the UK, but in Europe, where a whole bunch of Christians decided to stand outside a mosque with a massive big sign up, which nobody could miss, and it says, Jesus hates Muslims. Well, I'm glad you're shocked, because a reporter went in and thought, oh, I'll see how they feel about that inside. They went inside, spoke to one or two people, and one of the people said, I don't think Jesus would say that. And I think they're right. I think you think they're right too. We want to see in this passage that genuine Christian witness is invitational and communal. How does Jesus handle Andrew and his unnamed friend who come to him? Well, they call him Rabbi, Rabbi. And he doesn't berate them and say, "You're calling me a teacher? Is that the best you can offer? Don't you realize who I am? I'm the eternal Son of God. I came from the Father. I'm the creator of heaven and earth. I'm the maker and judge of all that is. And all you can do is call me a teacher." Does Jesus do that? No, he doesn't do that, does he? What does he say? He says, "Come and see." "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" And he said, "Come and see. If you come," and I wish you would come, I imagine he said, "you will see who I am." This is wonderful. There's no debate, there's no theory, there's no argument. There's a simple invitation. He doesn't even say, "I tell you what, get your act together, sort your life out, make sure everything's in order, and then come back." He doesn't do that, does he? A simple, "come and see, come with me." It's the open door of hospitality. He takes them to where he's living. He opens his house, his home, his life, his time is given for them. Do you know what? That's the normal way people become Christians. I bet if I did a survey, some of you would find, I'd find that that's the way some of you became Christians. It's exactly the same with Philip and Nathanael in the second half of our narrative this morning. Philip goes to Nathanael. Nathanael asks him a curly question. And what does Philip say? "Come and see. Come with me. Come and join us." And I would want you to feel able to do that. To say to people, just come and see for yourself. Come and have a look with those other people who are looking. Because we're all trying to explore the way forward. We're all trying to understand more of who Jesus is. Let's do it together. Peter and Nathanael are found and become followers of Jesus. Maybe you're sitting there and you're thinking, "Mark, it's not that easy. You haven't been around long. Magra and Undy is tough. Roggett and Redwick are difficult places." I was quite proud of this. I'm going to do this, right? Crick and Wilcrick. Hold on to your hats. Langston and Llanmartin. Llanfaglas and Llandyfod. Pennow and Park Seymour. Carwent and Caldicot. St Brides and Sudbrook. Have I missed any? Of course I've missed any. I've missed loads of places, haven't I? I like the idea of putting those in pairs. And I think all those places are probably difficult. And I suspect that you live in one of those places. It's not easy to introduce people to Jesus. Maybe slightly easier to invite them to share that journey, to share the exploration. Some of you are thinking that God could never use me. And some of us really believe that. But that's not helpful either. So stop thinking that. I find that if I pray, there are more opportunities. It's funny that, isn't it? And I'd even invite people to house groups where it's easy to read scripture with a very open curiosity type of attitude. Some of you, of course, will quote exceptions. You'll say, "Oh, what about those massive occasions that we can celebrate? The Billy Graham Crusades, the Louis Palau Pack Stadiums, the J. John events." Well, they occasionally broke the mold. Is it for me? No? Okay. Those occasionally broke the mold, but they entirely prove the rule that generally it's about invitation and it's communal, doing this together. That's the first point. Second one is a bit shorter. Don't worry. The second one is Christian witness is defective and effective at the same time. How many disciples were with Jesus at the end? Glad somebody's listening. Can you name them all? No, you can't. You can't. You can name Andrew and Philip and Peter and Nathaniel. One of them remains unnamed. Some of you just get ahead of yourselves, don't you? There you go. You'll catch me out one day, but I'll catch you out more often, don't worry. The amazing thing is that there are people who came to follow Jesus despite the defectiveness of the witnessing that was going on. Philip in particular. Philip is a very flawed and weak man. I love the commentators, more than one, who've described him as a limited man. Ooh, that would hurt, wouldn't you? Would that hurt? It would hurt if you heard that. He's a limited man. He was slow thinking and slow acting, and you're beginning to feel sorry for him, and that's absolutely fine. Well, every time Philip appears in John's Gospel, he puts his foot in his mouth. You know, no exceptions to that. And yet, it's not about how impressive he is as an individual, but the fact that he's part of a team, really. He's the crew who's involved in pointing people to Jesus. So just like Andrew, as soon as he begins to follow Jesus, verse 43, he begins to follow, and then verse 45, Philip finds Nathanael and blurts out this garbled statement about Jesus. We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, son of Joseph. I don't know if he learned that off pat or something. I wouldn't try it if I were you. I'd ignore that, really. It's not entirely helpful and not entirely true, to be honest. Jesus wasn't from Nazareth. He was from Bethlehem. We could more accurately say he's from the very beginning. He's from all eternity. He's from God himself. And Jesus was not really the son of Joseph. That's a bit mangled and not very helpful. But there is some good stuff in there. And despite that, he goes to Nathanael, and Nathanael responds. Yes, with a slightly cynical, yet I also think sincere response. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Which is a bit of small town snobbery, you know, like mega people looking at undie people. And I know. Yeah, you know. Nathanael's from Cana, and he's going, Nazareth? Nazareth? Puffy little place, you know, insignificant. He's probably thinking the Messiah couldn't come from such an insignificant place. Like, we couldn't possibly imagine anybody significant coming from Caldecott, could we, or Rogget, or anywhere like that. Well, I've upset most people. I might upset everybody, haven't I, really? Whatever it was that caused Nathanael to say that, I think there's something genuine about his question. The thing is that Philip, who's trying to be a good witness, doesn't enter into the conversation and say, oh, I've got a really good response. I've got a really, really snappy answer to this. What does he say? He realizes he's over his head. He realizes he's beyond him. He realizes he can't give a good answer. And some of us need to do that sometimes. Just say, I don't know. But what he does say is, come and see. It's not the first time you've heard that this morning. It's the phrase that's used, come and see, which is undoubtedly the best way of responding to somebody who's got a prejudice against the church or against Jesus. It's just to get them to come and see for themselves. I don't know where you got that idea from, because people do have crazy ideas about us, don't they? Where they get them from, I have no idea. But if they just come and see, they would probably, I hope, probably find that it overcomes their prejudice. So despite his defective witness, he is effective in bringing Nathanael to Jesus, which is meant to encourage you. It's meant to say to you that you will think that your witnessing is defective. Yes, it will be. I guarantee you it will be, because there isn't anything that you can say or do will get even close to reflecting who Jesus really is. But that's not a reason for not inviting people. Defective words become effective witness by simply pointing people to Jesus, or to come and see with the rest of us. Defective becomes effective by pointing to Jesus. So Nathanael comes to Jesus and he's wonderfully honest, and Jesus gives him a response. And Nathanael replies in verse 49, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God, the King of Israel," because Nathanael is responding to what he does know. And Jesus acknowledges Nathanael's faith with a promise that he will see greater things, and explains what those greater things are in verse 51. "Very truly, I tell you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." This is a reference back to the Old Testament. This is from Genesis chapter 28, the story of Jacob and his dream of a ladder, you know, the original stairway of heaven, with the angels ascending and descending. And what Jesus is saying here is he is pointing out that he is that ladder. He is the connection between heaven and earth. He is the connection between creator and creation. He is the means by which heaven comes to us and we come to heaven. He is the point of intersection between God and humanity. And this is not limited to a single event. This is not a reference to Jesus's baptism, I don't think, because this is a reference to the ongoing work of Jesus, that everything he said and everything he did demonstrated the openness of heaven. It summarizes his whole ministry. And that's why it's good to bring people to Jesus, to point people to Jesus, this one who is the link, the bridge, the way to all that we long for and aspire to have. So let's pray, shall we, as a people, as a church, as this second half of chapter 1 encourages us to do so, pray that God would make us witnesses for him. Because true witness is both invitational and communal. It's defective, yes, but effective also. And for those of you for whom this might have gone right over your head, well, I've just got these words for you too. "And do not fear the memory of sin. There is a light that heals, and where it falls, transfigures and redeems the darkest stain into translucent colour. Loose the veils and draw the curtains back. Unbar the doors of that dread threshold where your spirit fails. Come and follow Jesus with us." Shall we sing? Let's stand to sing, shall we? I'm going to sing a song.